Good morning. Whether you are joining us online or here in the sanctuary, welcome to First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin, Texas. We are a spiritual community dedicated to a free and responsible search for truth, meaning, and beauty. I'm the Reverend Michelle LaGrave, the co-lead interim minister here. I am a queer, white, middle-aged woman with short hair wearing a red goddess spiral stole today. And my pronouns are she, her. It is a joy, an absolute joy to be with all of you this morning. I especially want to welcome you if you are new or visiting with us today. If you are joining us remotely, and if you can, please say hello in the comments and let us know where you are joining us from. If you are here in person, please join us for the social hour after the service. There will be food. Either way, we invite you to fill out the online visitor form at austinuu.org. We would love to get to know you better. Our service this morning will be an exploration of an old and mostly forgotten Hebrew mother goddess, Asherah. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, wherever you find yourself on your life's journey, whichever your pronouns, whether you've walked in or rolled in or dialed in, whether you worship the god, the goddess, or no god at all, whomever you love, you are welcome here. You belong here. We come from a long tradition of seeing the spark of the divine in every person. It's in this tradition, this living tradition, that I invite you to greet the holy among us, either in the comments or by turning to one another here in the sanctuary.
Good morning. My name is Nathan Lawrence. And today, in place of the usual words, please join me to say the words by Reverend Amy Zucker Morgenstern as we light the chalice. Blessed is the dark in which our dreams stir and are revealed. Blessed is the dark of earth where seeds come to life. Blessed are the depths of the ocean where no light shimmers, the womb of all earthly life. Blessed is the light into which we awake, the light that sparkles on the waters, that calls the tree forth from the sea, and calls the shadow forth from the tree. Blessed are we as we move through darkness and through light. The call to worship today is by Mary Eads. If God is your strength and companion, and prayer the means of centering your thoughts, repeat after me, there is room for you here. If the teachings of the Buddha give you clarity and calm in the midst of human striving, there is room for you here. If Gaia's seasonal rhythms lead you best through the myriad steps of life's great dance, there is room for you here. If the still, mysterious capacity and power of the mind stirs your imagination and quickens your pulse, there is room for you here. Thank you. Rest now beside that spring, wherever it is for you.
One of the things that binds First UU together as a religious community is that the congregation has a common purpose. For First UU of Austin, that common purpose is the mission. The congregation wrote it together and put it up on the wall in the sanctuary. Every Sunday, church participants say it together so that we may more readily carry it with us in our hearts throughout the week. Let us say it together now. Together, we nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice to build the beloved community.
Today's reading is an excerpt from Remember by Joy Harjer. Remember your birth, how your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You are evidence of her life and her mother's and hers. Remember your father, he is your life also. Remember the earth whose skin you are. Red earth, black earth, yellow earth, white earth, brown earth, bare earth.
Please find a comfortable place in your seat. Ground yourself in some way so that you may feel connected to the earth, which nourishes and sustains us all. Close your eyes if you feel comfortable doing so. And take a deep breath in as together we enter into a time of meditation followed by silence. What if there were a universe, a cosmos, which began in shining blackness, out of nothing, out of fire, out of a single silent breath? And into it came billions and billions of stars, stars beyond imagining. And near one of them, a world, a blue-green world so beautiful that learned clergymen could not even speak about it cogently, and brilliant scientists with their physics, their mathematics, their empirical, impressionistic musing in trying to describe it would begin to sound like poets. What if there a universe in which a world was born out of a smallish star, and into that world at some point flew red-winged blackbirds, and into it swam sperm whales, and into it bloomed crocuses, and into it blew wind to lift the tiniest hairs on naked arms in spring, and into it at some point grew onions out of soil, and in went Mount Everest and also the coyote we spotted in the woods about a mile from here, just after sunrise on these mornings when the moon is full. The very scent of him makes his brother, our dog, insane with fear and joy and ancient inbred memory. Into that world came animals and elements and plants and imagination, the mind and the mind's eye. If such a universe existed, and you noticed it, what would you do? What song would come out of your mouth? What prayer? What praises? What sacred offering? What whirling dance? What religion and what reverential gesture would you make to greet the world every single day that you were in it? Let us enter into the silence together. We begin our candlelighting time with a communal ritual honoring our most ancient of human ancestors and human milestones. The first is for Arti from 4.4 million years ago, Ardipithecus ramidus, the most complete early hominid skeleton. She was about 110 pounds, 3 feet 11 inches, likely bipedal on the ground, quadrupedal in the trees, and ate a diet of fruit and nuts. The next is for Lucy from 3.2 million years ago, Australopithecus afarensis. Over 2 million years ago, the genus Homo emerges, the earliest hominins who began to use stone tools. The fourth is the control of fire by humans, 1.5 million years ago. Next is the earliest evidence of Homo sapiens sapiens outside of Africa, 210,000 years ago in Greece. Mitochondrial Eve, 150,000 years ago. Next, the earliest evidence for agriculture, now at 23,000 years ago, near the Sea of Galilee, and most certainly by 12,000 years ago. biblical Eve, which is the mythic story of leaving the Garden of Eden, of leaving Africa, transition to agriculture, transition to hidden menses and monogamy. Miriam, the sister of Moses, about 1,200-ish years ago. Our individual mothers. I am Michelle, the daughter of Nancy, who is the daughter of Eleanor, who is the daughter of Henrietta, who is the daughter of Eleanor, who is the daughter of Martha. And we light this candle for all the mothers of my line.
I am Nason, son of Jaya, who is the daughter of Amalurpavam, who is the daughter of Teresa. And we light this candle for all the mothers of my line. And I invite you to light candles honoring your own lines of descent or whatever it is you need to honor during this time.
Shattered dreamers, make them one.
And now we light one last candle for all those joys and sorrows held close in our hearts, both within our community and in the wider world. Once, early on a drizzly Saturday morning, I went to see the Dalai Lama, the spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhism. As I sat in this gigantic outdoor football stadium, he said, "Think about this. Every one of us here, some 10,000 of us, has a mother." And he paused for a moment, allowing that knowledge to sink into our very beings. A hush fell over the stadium, so that in the silence I could almost hear the thoughts of others. And I certainly felt the sense of amazement as we took in this knowledge that we are all connected to each other in such a fundamental way. It's such a simple fact, isn't it? We were all, each and every one of us, born of a woman. And, I'd guess, it's a fact most of us take for granted. It wasn't always so, this taking of for granted of new life. Disconnection from our bodies and disconnection from nature is a rather modern phenomenon. Today, in this country, most of us were born in a hospital, in a sterile environment with quick and easy access to life-saving drugs, equipment, and procedures, with quick and easy access to the miracle of modern medical technology. But for the millennia before the advent of modern medicine, we were born, that is, our human ancestors were born, in the grasses of the savanna, within the confines of caves, under the protection of thatched roofs. Our survival and the survival of our mothers was always in question. For our survival, we relied on the wisdom of the women who had gone before, on the oral traditions that had been passed down from generation to generation, on the medicinal value of plants and herbs growing nearby. And we relied on the goddess. We relied on the goddess. Throughout ancient times and ancient cultures, it was the goddess who was revered. Archaeological evidence from Palestine of the 13th and 14th centuries BCE, in the form of clay figurines, with their emphasis on the elements of human fertility and survival, large breasts, humongous hips, pubic triangle, tells us that our earliest religious impulse as humans was to worship the goddess. That makes sense to me, for as people, we were intimately tied to the cycles and rhythms of nature, of the earth. We knew life and death. We knew the seasons of the year. We knew seed time and harvest. In a way, most of us today cannot and do not know. And we, that is our human ancestors, made the connection between human sexuality and reproduction and the implantation of seeds in Mother Earth. For our very survival depended on both. Today, we celebrate Mother's Day. Mothers all over the country will be blessed with brunch, courted with cards, favored with flowers, and showered with small gifts of time and treasure. Joy and good humor abound, such as was sent in this old email chain, when second graders were asked questions about the relationships between mothers and God. Here is a few of the things that they said. "Why did God make mothers?" they were asked. "She's the only one who knows where the scotch tape is." "How did God make mothers?" "Magic plus superpowers plus a lot of stirring." And finally, and I think our owl kids will probably have better answers. And finally, "What ingredients are mothers made of?" "Clouds and angel hair and everything nice in the world and one dab of mean." Of course, Mother's Day is not only joy, good humor, and celebration. On this day, children mourn the deaths of their mothers. Mothers mourn the deaths of their children. And some children grieve the loss of the mothers they wish they had or never knew. When the Dalai Lama spoke to that stadium full of people, reminding us of our common origin from our mothers, I do not know if he was aware of the approaching Mother's Day holiday here in the U.S. or not. He taught of the importance of a mother's touch, of a nurturing touch, in the first few months of human life, of its essential function in brain development. And he spoke of his own mother, telling stories from his childhood. He told us his mother was a person of great kindness and compassion, and he spoke of being spoiled by her. During the earliest time of his life, in the first 2 years, his mother carried him about on her shoulders just about everywhere she went. He said that when he wanted her to go this way, he tugged on that ear, and she went that way. And when he wanted to go that way, he tugged on this ear, and she went that way. But sometimes, when she wouldn't do as he wished, he tugged on both ears like this. Yes, the story is both funny and cute, and for that reason alone, it is one of my favorites. Without fail, I smile each time I remember him telling this story. To me, though, the wonder of this teaching is its humility, and the brilliance of its teaching is its universality. For all are not mothers, and many shall never be, but we are all children of mothers. We were all born of a woman, all, even Jesus, even Muhammad, even Buddha, even the Dalai Lama. For this teaching gets at the heart of life, the cycles of life and death, or as the Dalai Lama would say, birth and rebirth, for this is the universal connection of all human life. Earlier, I spoke of the importance of the goddess in nearly every human religion. Yet our culture has developed in such a way that the male god is most commonly worshipped. So how did that happen? Where did the goddess go? Did she simply disappear with the advent of monotheism? Almost, but not quite. As we shall see, biblical scholars and archaeologists have been busy rediscovering and reclaiming the goddess of ancient Israel. In one of the most intriguing stories of the Hebrew Bible, God, who is very upset with the people of Israel, speaks to Jeremiah and says to him, "As for you, do not pray for this people. Do not raise a cry or prayer on their behalf, and do not intercede with me, for I will not hear you. Do you not see what they are doing in the towns of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem? The children gather wood, the fathers kindle fire, and the women knead dough to make cakes for the Queen of Heaven. And they pour out drink offerings to other gods to provoke me to anger. Later in the story, after the first temple had been destroyed and many of the Israelites were exiled to Babylonia, Jeremiah then speaks to a crowd of refugees who had fled Jerusalem, explaining that they cannot escape the wrath of God by fleeing to Egypt. Then all the men who were aware that their wives had been making offerings to other gods, and all the women who stood by a great assembly, all the people who lived in Pathros in the land of Egypt, answered Jeremiah, "As for the word you have spoken to us in the name of the Lord, we are not going to listen to you. Instead, we will do everything we have vowed, make offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pour out libations to her. Just as we and our ancestors, our kings and our officials, used to do in the towns of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. We used to have plenty of food and prospered and saw no misfortune. But from the time we stopped making offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pouring out libations to her, we have lacked everything and perished by the sword and famine." And the women said, "Indeed, we will go on making offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pouring out libations to her. Do you think we made cakes for her, marked with her image, and poured out libations to her without our husbands being involved?" I have here a trusty study Bible. You might not be able to see this super well, especially on the screen, but you can see there's a whole ton of little green tabs in there. That is every place where they talk about the Queen of Heaven. She was not completely erased. Mostly, but enough of her remained in order to argue for monogamy. Monotheism. Oh my goodness. Oh. There are many interpretations of these passages of Jeremiah. Some say that the Queen of Heaven was Ishtar or Astarte, a foreign goddess. Others say she was Asherah. Some say she was the consort of the Lord of Israel. Others say that she simply represented the feminine side of God. I believe the strongest evidence supports the idea that the Queen of Heaven was Asherah, the wife of the old Hebrew god El, whose worship flourished throughout biblical times. William Deaver, a professor of archaeology, believes that the writers of the Hebrew Bible, in their monotheistic interpretation, were actually battling a widespread and well-entrenched folk religion, a religion practiced not just by the women, but by the men as well. A religion which revered and worshipped the Queen of Heaven in all of her local manifestations. A religion which worshipped a Hebrew goddess. Yes, a Hebrew goddess through and through. And yes, I am very aware of what is going on in the land today. And interestingly enough, the hill country, the areas which were the actual ancient Israelite sites where we would want to be able to do archaeology on these, are in the Palestine that is being destroyed. So eventually, As we all know, monotheism and a patriarchal God did win the battle for the religion of the people, or at least most people. Worship of the goddess continued, albeit underground and in secret, and survived through millennia of persecution, finally reemerging in the light of day, or perhaps by the light of the moon. In the form of pagan and Wiccan traditions practiced today by UUs and many others the world over, other vestiges remain as well. The goddess has survived in mystical Judaism as the Shekinah, the feminine aspect of God who dwells in this world, and the goddess has survived in all of Judaism as the Sabbath bride. In Christianity, the goddess has arrived in the form of Mary as the human mother of a divine God, a story long familiar to many pagan traditions, as well as the old religions of Egypt. Over the course of time, as human societies grew increasingly complex and more patriarchal, women lost much of their stories, much of their power, much of their access to the divine. Women lost their roles as prophets and priests. Women lost their goddess. As Unitarians and Universalists, we have our proud stories of reclaiming the place of women in history, in ministry, which is why I'm standing here before you today. Universalists lay claim to what was perhaps the first modern ordination of a woman to ministry, most likely the Reverend Olympia Brown in the year 1863. Unitarians took their turn a few years later with the ordination of the Reverend Celia Burleigh. But lest we be too proud of ourselves, it is also important to remember that the history of women in Unitarian and Universalism was also sometimes problematic. Our triumphs were more often the exception than the rule. Despite our early ordination of women, many congregations rarely or never called a female minister. Some today have their first female minister serving, cisgender woman minister serving. It wasn't until 2017 that we elected a woman to the presidency of the Unitarian Universalist Association for the first time. As we journey forward in our quest to regain the divine feminine, I am reminded of some old ideas about the unity of God. In Platonic Hellenistic thought, society was organized in a hierarchy of those thought to be farthest away from God and those thought to be closest to and most like God or the gods. Not surprisingly, slave women were on the bottom of the hierarchy. On the next rung up, slave men. On the next, free women. And on the next, free men. But at the very top of the hierarchy, those thought to be the most like God were androgynous or genderless people. Today, we would say non-binary. People who are genderful were at the top of the rung, most close to and most like God. A similar line of thought continued in the writings of early Gnostic Christians found at Nag Hammadi. They believed that the end times would manifest as a return to the beginning times, to the time before humans were divided into male and female, when humans were simply one gender. This yearning for unity, for the goddess and the god, is reflected in these words by a UU minister, the Reverend Shirley Ann Rank. She writes this as if from the perspective of Gomar, a devotee of Asherah, who is speaking to her husband, Hosea, a prophet of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the Lord of Israel. Are our gods so different? Must it be one or the other? Can we not dwell together in harmony? Is Asherah so different from the gods of your ancestors, Hosea? Were they so different, El Shaddai and Asherah, the divinity of the mountains and the god of the air and rain? Forgive me as I forgive you, even as our gods, the great Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh and the great Asherah, forgive us. May they live side by side. Although I know in my heart that may never be, I still pray for it. And someday your world-transcending God will be reconciled with my world-renewing God. Peace shall reign, and we shall be together again in the land. And so our search for Asherah continues. May we reclaim the goddess while retaining the God. Amen, and blessed be.
Join me saying the words as we extinguish the chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we hold in our hearts until we are together again.
Our circle is open but unbroken. May the goddess and the god go with you and all the protection they provide. All are one. Mary meet and Mary part and Mary meet again. Amen and blessed be.
This is a production of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, go to our website at austinuu.org.